Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, should the United States and Canada become one country? We'll talk to an author from Toronto proposing just that. My first question, what would they want with our Mishigas? Which, if you don't know the word, I think you can figure it out from the context. Also, decoding the new statin guidelines. Should 72 million Americans really be on cholesterol-lowering medications, including some with normal cholesterol levels? And Etsy vendors making stuff in factories. What happened to DIY? But first, on the heels of the Obamacare rollout debacle, President Obama's approval rating has dipped into the 30s for the first time in a new Quinnipiac poll, 39%. And maybe even worse, a majority of those polled, 52%, now rate him as not honest and trustworthy, apparently because of his promise that you could keep your old health insurance, period, if you liked it, when that is turning out not to be true for certain people with individual policies under the new Affordable Care Act. Former President Bill Clinton joined the chorus yesterday of those saying Obama has to do something about that.
Young people, mostly, but not all young, who are in the individual market whose incomes are above 400% of the poverty level. They were the ones who heard the promise, if you like what you got, you can keep it. I met a young man this week who has a family, two children, bought in the individual marketplace. His policy was canceled and one was substituted for it that doubled his premium. Now, I asked him, I said, same coverage? He said, yeah. And I said, but are your co-pays and deductibles the same? He said, no, they're much, much lower. So he said, in the years when I use health care, I might actually save money. But he said, you know, we're all young and we're all healthy. So I personally believe, even if it takes a change in the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got.
All right. Some NPR music creeping in the background from the edit that we took there. But the important part is the end, where President Clinton says, I personally believe, even if it takes a change to the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got, President Clinton yesterday. And let's jump in right there with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. Hi, Julie. You're on the network so much these days with all the Obamacare news. We appreciate this private showing for the WNYC listeners.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. And by the way, that was the website's own music. We actually had to call them and get them to send us a clean version of that cut so we could use it this morning.
Oh, no kidding. You mean a Bill Clinton website?
Yeah, the Bill Clinton. It was an interview with a website, and they had actually put the music underneath of it.
Maybe they so associate Bill Clinton with gauzy music that they had to
do that. I guess so.
So you heard Bill Clinton, and I also see that there's a Republican bill in Congress called the Keep Your Health Insurance Act. And Democrats in Congress are also beginning to embrace this idea. Is Congress about to revise the Affordable Care Act to actually let people keep their old policies?
I wouldn't go that far, but there is certainly a sense of panic, I think, in the Congress. Republicans, of course, have been doing everything they can to try and pile on here since these cancellation notices started coming out. Democrats, particularly Democrats in the Senate, who are up next year, have been worried about this. The president met with them, some of them, last week, and Mary Landrieu introduced a bill last week, not the same as the House bill, I might add, but there's an effort to do something about this. The problem, of course, is that it's very hard to, unring the bell, as they say. The insurance companies spent most of a year sort of taking back these policies, rolling out new policies. It's now the middle of November. It would be extremely difficult for them to just say, oh, never mind, we're really sorry, and just extend those policies. It's not that easily done. Congress couldn't pass legislation if they want, but actually, implementing that in a very short time would be extraordinarily difficult, if not actually impossible.
Are the Republicans sincere in proposing such a bill?
I would not wish to say that they are insincere, but I think a lot of them really haven't thought about the actual difficulties in turning this around in, and the extremely short time between now and the 1st of January, which is when these policies basically evaporate.
Right. But will they even pass there? I realize you're a health policy reporter, not a political analyst, but they may be more interested.
I cover Congress.
Okay. So maybe they're more interested in doing rhetorical damage to the president than actually fixing the Affordable Care Act. Will they pass their own bill?
Well, the House will certainly pass its own bill. You know, the question is what's going to happen in the Senate. And there's increasing pressure on Harry Reid to try to figure out some way to ameliorate this situation. And, of course, the president said last week in his interview on NBC that he's, you know, tasked his aides to try and figure out some way to ameliorate this situation. And the problem is there really aren't any good ways to ameliorate the situation. The law was really set up to redo the individual health insurance market. And there was, you know, knowledge beforehand that the people, many of the people who were paying artificially low rates because sick people were excluded from this market were probably going to pay more. Now, as you know, former President Clinton mentioned in his anecdote, some of those people who were paying artificially low rates will be helped by the fact that if they can get on the website, they'll get help. They'll get these tax credits. Some of the people who are paying artificially low rates and make more than 400% of poverty will pay higher rates. That's probably a fairly small number, but those are the people who are going to complain. And it's still because, you know, it's not a huge percent of the population, but it is, you know, 12, 13, 14 million people. And if it's some percentage of them, it could be 2 or 3 million people. They're the ones who are writing to their congressmen and senators. And that's what we're feeling right now is the backlash of those people.
Right. And
those people, right, haven't been able to get on the website to see what their options are. So the problem was that once they got those cancellation notices, they were supposed to be able to get on the website and see if they could get better, perhaps cheaper coverage, and a lot of them haven't been able to, and that's the box that everybody's in politically.
And we certainly have had no trouble getting our lines flooded with callers here, including many people who describe themselves as liberal Democrats, who are very supportive of the Affordable Care Act, who've been shocked to find that their individual policies were being canceled by the insurance companies and that the only ones now available cost them much more. So listeners, should Congress change the law to allow people to keep your individual policies that don't have the new Obamacare standards? 212-433-WNYC. What do you think? And should insurance companies be allowed to sell Obamacare policies without using the healthcare.gov website? We'll get into this in a minute. It would mean your insurance companies would see some of your tax information to calculate your subsidy. Would that be okay with you? We'll talk about that issue too. So again, should Congress change the law to allow people to keep your individual policies that don't have the new Obamacare standards, as the president appeared to promise originally? And should insurance companies be allowed to sell you Obamacare policies and just bypass healthcare.gov, but they would see the tax information to calculate your subsidies? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. There's, you know, dozens and dozens of comments on our comments page every time we're talking about Obamacare in recent days. So you can get that going again over there, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and call us up, 212-433-9692. With Julie Rovner, NPR health policy correspondent. And Julie, let's back up one step. The reason the plans are being dropped, and correct me if this is wrong or too simple, is they don't meet the minimum standards that are in the new law. So a change in the law would mean requiring insurance companies to keep offering these grandfathered plans to people who already have them or recently had them, after the insurance companies were told they may not do so because the plans weren't comprehensive enough. Correct?
Yeah, although that's a little bit. Now, grandfathered is actually a specific legal term, and those mean plans that were in existence on the day the law was signed, which was March of 2010. And almost nobody in the individual market actually has a plan that existed then because everybody has changed their deductible or something about the plan has changed. Most people in the individual market don't keep plans for 3 years or almost 4 years. But what's interesting is that there are a lot of things that the insurance companies could do, frankly, frankly, without any change in the law. They can sell an existing plan. They can renew it on December 31st of 2013, a non-compliant plan that runs through December 31st of 2014, if they want to. So a lot of these, you know, insurance companies are being, you know, a little bit disingenuous. They could what they can't do is sell a non-compliant plan or renew it after January 1st. But if they wanted to, they can sell you your existing plan as it is now all the way through the end of the year, and it can go all the way through the end of 2014. That's perfectly legitimate under the current law. So some of these companies are canceling these plans because they want to, not because they have to.
And why do they want to? Because they'll make more money selling these same people these plans with higher benefits as required under the Act?
In some cases, these are people that they would rather have in the exchanges because there's a chance for them to get reinsurance payments if those people turn out to be more expensive if they're in the exchange rather than on their regular books. Also, you can buy directly from your insurance company now without the insurance company being able to see your tax information. There's supposed to be a way for the insurance company to send you to the exchange, get you qualified for your tax credit and come back without the insurance company having access to that. That's what's not working right now, and that's the big frustration from the insurance companies. They're hoping to get that fixed within the next couple of weeks.
And I think Melissa in Manhattan is calling on exactly this point. So, Melissa, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple of points about this. First, I think that the reason that Bill Clinton may have said that is because as kind of a payback for what came out in the book recently about what Obama said about he can take him in doses. I think everything I've read and heard about the Clintons is that if they feel they've been wronged politically or publicly, they pay people back.
But do you disagree with the premise that if President Obama made such an explicit promise, and we're not re-airing the clip today, but I think everybody knows it by now, if you like your insurance, you can keep it, period. If he made such an explicit promise on a number of occasions, does he not have a responsibility to try to follow through and keep that promise?
That's what I think is so frustrating. I think he shouldn't have said that because, first of all, I'm sure he knew that insurance companies would start canceling people. But it's not his fault that insurance companies are canceling people. It's insurance companies' fault. Like just what your guest just made the point. Insurance companies want to cancel people because they don't want to pay for all of this coverage that the reform law now requires. So they want to cancel as many people as possible. And so I think the law that needs to be changed is to require these insurance companies, nothing about the healthcare law, but to require these insurance companies to keep people. That's a law that should be changed, but I don't think that there's enough support for that because it's all about money.
Melissa, thank you very much. And Melissa is accurate to a point, I think, and Julie, correct me if I'm wrong. The insurance companies don't have to be dropping people right now, but they would have to drop them within a year of the onset of the Affordable Care Act, or October 1st of next year, because by then all their plans have to have these minimum benefits. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's true. Actually, starting January 1st of next year. Starting January 1st, they can sell no new policies, nor can they renew policies that are not compliant. So, yes, eventually this would kick in and people would be canceled because they don't meet the minimum requirements of the Affordable Care Act. And yes, the caller's absolutely right. And you're absolutely right. And people have said this all along that you know, the president clearly overspoke when he said, you know, you will not, you know, you can keep your policy, period. I think the irony of what Bill Clinton said is that the reason the president said that is because one of the biggest complaints about the Clinton health plan was that it really would have shaken up everybody's health insurance. And that was one of the big pushbacks, is that it was too much change for too many people. So I think one of the things that when they were designing, you know, the Affordable Care Act, is that really the only people that were going to be kind of dislocated were the people in this individual insurance market. Most people with employer-provided insurance, most people with government insurance aren't really affected. It's only the individual market that's being shaken up like this. And I think that's what the president was trying to say when he said, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. He meant if you like your insurance and you're not in the individual market, you can keep it. Of course, that's not what he said.
Right.
But it's sort of this irony that it's now Bill Clinton who's coming back to bite him, because it was really focusing on what what the Clintons had tried to do and failed to do back in the 1990s.
That is ironic. And we should clarify, so people don't get scared unnecessarily, that the potential to get your existing insurance coverage canceled only applies to people who bought insurance on the individual market as individuals, and if those plans don't meet the new standards for benefits, it does not apply to plans you get at work, right? If you're covered by your employer, no risk of cancellation because of the Affordable Care Act. True?
Well, true, sort of. I mean, there are lots of changes going on in the employer-provided insurance market. There are some new rules for employer-provided insurance. There are some new taxes that are being applied to employer-provided insurance. But, you know, employer-provided insurance has been changing anyway. It's hard to know how much of what's going on in the employer-provided insurance market is due to the Affordable Care Act and how much is what was happening in any case. I actually did a story on this fairly recently. It's very difficult to tease out some of those changes. Health costs continue to go up. Not as fast as they were, but they do continue to rise. It continues to be a burden on employers. They're trying to find different ways to deal with rising health costs. And so that is changing. And, you know, a lot of people, a lot of employers are trying to blame it on the law, which may or may not be the case in some cases. So people are seeing their employer insurance change. And some people are blaming that on the law. And some people are blaming it unfairly on the law also.
So what if your coverage at work is substandard under the new law? It doesn't include all the benefits that are now required to be included. Are they allowed to continue to offer that plan?
Yes, the essential benefits only actually, though, these 10 benefits only apply to individual and small group markets.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's take another call. Kevin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'd like to know who the people are who like their coverage that's being canceled from the individual market. I mean, that's what President Clinton and Republicans have been saying, that there's all these people upset about, you know, losing their coverage that they like so much. But I'm a 29-year-old who has just emergency room coverage that I pay almost $200 a month for it. And to me, I don't like my coverage at all, and it is being canceled. And the plans that seem to be offered through the system, the exchange, or will be, I guess, seem to be much better in terms of price. They're cheaper, and they will actually allow me to go to a doctor. And I'm not trying to defend President Obama and the way the Affordable Care Act is unfolded in any way, but just that it seems like kind of a mythology that there's people who are upset about losing their terrible coverage.
Right. Well, what about some people who would just rather take that risk? And again, we've had any number of calls from people who say they're politically on the side of the Affordable Care Act, but they've been, and the Democrats in general, but they've been shocked to find that they had a high deductible policy with relatively low premiums that was working for them, and now they have to dump it. And some of them don't make, you know, little enough money to get subsidies, and so they're getting socked with more comprehensive care that they didn't want at a more comprehensive price.
Well, I mean, from my looking at the sort of available plans that you can see anyway from private insurers, is that the plans are no worse and better, maybe at least for younger people, than the kinds of like hot, you know, catastrophe type plans that exist now and have higher premiums. So, I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, to the extent that it's true among some people, it also seems like it's being used politically by even President Clinton to make a point and sort of patronize those people who are young and, you know, want to take a risk, supposedly.
Kevin, thank you very much. Julie, how would you react to any of that?
I think what you're largely seeing are the complaints coming from healthy people, and that's for two reasons. First of all, healthy people were always the winners in the individual market. They were the ones who were able to get insurance in the individual market. But also, healthy people were largely people who didn't use their health insurance. So sometimes they had really crummy insurance and had no idea how bad it was because they'd never had a chance to use it. Sometimes they didn't know that their insurance only covered perhaps, you know, a day or two in the hospital. You know, some of these people had no idea really how bad their insurance was. All they knew was that the premium were low. So you have this sort of double whammy there about these people who are now complaining. It's like, oh, I really liked my insurance. And, you know, all they knew is maybe, oh, well, I had a high deductible, but they had no idea that behind that high deductible, they had almost no coverage. And that's why their premiums were so low.
You know, one issue that keeps coming up, and it came up here again yesterday from a caller, is maternity, and why should women beyond a certain age be forced to buy plans that have maternity coverage, thereby pushing up the premium? We had a caller the other day who said his parents had individual coverage. Their plan was canceled. The new plans that are available are more expensive to them because they don't qualify for subsidies. And, oh, by the way, it includes maternity care. And, you know, his mother is at an age where no way she's having any more kids. Why that in particular? Because it keeps coming up.
It does keep coming up. And there was a great piece in the LA Times a couple of weeks ago that talked about this. It's like, you know, I don't have any kids, but I pay for schools. It's, you know, the idea of this is a social good. If only the people who are going to have children pay for maternity care, no one's going to be able to afford it. But it's in everybody's interest for there to be, you know, healthy moms and healthy kids. We all pay for Medicaid coverage, which covers maternity. That's the idea. You're all in one insurance pool, and everybody pays for everybody else's care. That's sort of the idea. Most people aren't going to get cancer either, but everybody has cancer coverage. I mean, that is sort of the idea of insurance. You're insuring against a risk. So that's the idea of maternity care. I'm not going to get prostate cancer either, but I'm paying for somebody else's prostate coverage. That's why maternity is in there as an essential benefit.
Julie Robner, health policy correspondent for NPR. And to the question of the president's honesty, now that he's for the first time being rated as majority dishonest and not trustworthy in this new Quinnipiac poll, apparently largely as a result of this whole thing, when he stated that people could keep their old insurance period. You've been explaining what he probably meant, even though it sounded much broader by what he said. Here's a clip that Republicans are passing around YouTube. This is from a televised healthcare summit back from 2010 when the law was being debated with President Obama and congressional leaders. In this clip, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Republican of Virginia, challenges the president by predicting that millions of people will not be able to keep their current plans. Turns out Cantor was right. And we'll hear President Obama's response in which he challenges Cantor's statement. And listen carefully, folks, because this is being touted as Obama acknowledging back then that people would be kicked off their plans. To my ear, he disagrees with that idea. But still, Cantor puts it in front of him point blank. Here we go. See how you hear this clip.
I don't think that you can answer the question in the positive to say that people will be able to maintain their coverage, people will be able to see the doctors they want in the kind of bill that you're proposing.
Well, let me, since you asked me a question, let me respond. The 8 to 9 million people that you refer to that might have to change their coverage, keep in mind out of the 300 million Americans that we're talking about, would be folks who the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, estimates would find the deal in the exchange better, would be a better deal. So they would change coverage because they've got more choice and competition. So let's just be clear about that, point number one.
Eric Cantor and the president in 2010. Julie, have you heard that before?
I heard it at the time. the president, I'm hearing now that the health policy people at the time were fighting with the political people, telling the president, please don't say this quite so point blank because we know it's not true.
I want to move to the issue of the troubled website, healthcare.gov. The White House is still saying the site will be fixed for the vast majority of customers by the end of this month. And they've sent out 275,000 emails to people who started to shop on the site and got stuck, but had entered their email addresses. They're saying, you can come back now. Please try again. Is healthcare.gov getting that much better that quickly?
Well, certainly the fact that they're sending out these emails is an indication that they think it is. But there was a story in the Washington Post this morning with some anonymous sources suggesting that it may not, in fact, be all fixed by the end of November, which is going to be a big problem because, remember, in order to get coverage that begins January 1st, you have to be enrolled by December 15th. So there's going to be an awful lot of people who are going to be trying to sign up between, you know, December 1st and December 15th. So if it's not fixed, there's going to be a big problem for next month.
And related to that, insurance companies are now asking if they can sell Obamacare policies directly to buyers without using healthcare.gov as an intermediary. And I see they're doing that in Maryland now to bypass problems with the state exchange there. And that got me thinking, why did they have to set up the website at all. Car insurance is required in every state, and we just call GEICO or Liberty Mutual or Allstate or whoever, and we buy it from them, not from the Department of Motor Vehicles. Why couldn't they do it the same way?
Well, this is a big question, and you know, there and the folks at eHealth Insurance, who of course have a website where you can compare plans, are asking the same thing. Why did they have to reinvent the wheel? And this becomes a good question. Obviously, health insurance is a lot more complicated than car insurance, and it is nice to have a place to compare. But clearly, it's not working that well, and there's no tax credits. You know, obviously for car insurance, although I think a lot of people think that might be a nice thing. But it's not working the way it should. We're on sort of a short time frame here, given that people want insurance. It starts January 1st. And it is an issue. And the insurers, you know, you can go straight to the insurance company if you want to, but then you won't be able to see the whole array of choices that you might have. And it is difficult. And now they are asking the insurers to step in a little bit more aggressively to get people actually enrolled. Once they've shopped, and if you've made a choice of plan, you can. But the question is, if you're eligible for that subsidy, how are you then going to be able to apply it? And that's what they're working on right now.
Is privacy the issue that healthcare.gov was set up so that insurance companies don't get to see our tax returns in calculating the subsidy?
It's not completely privacy. It's also about, you know, how you actually managed to set that premium and set up the payment and figure out how much to pay. It's partly privacy, but it's also partly just the inner workings of making it happen.
Marge on the Upper East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marge.
Hi.
You had a great policy and you wanted to keep it?
Yeah, I had an extremely comprehensive policy. It was expensive, but it had no deductible, it had very low copays, no fees for lab tests and blood tests, et cetera. And anything I find now is, in fact, a lower premium, but it's very hard to tell how much it'll cost me because all the copays are much higher, prescription drugs are much higher, everything out of pocket is much, much higher. And the other thing is that I can still get a version of my plan from my insurer, which would have the same network of doctors, but I don't know the doctors in the other plans. In fact, I saw my primary care physician yesterday, and the office manager told me, I asked them about these new plans, and the office manager said to me, I don't know what we're going to do. We're just so confused.
Mm. Marge, thank you. And so that's the other thing that President Obama said, Julie, in that famous quote, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, period. So that's another shuffle that people didn't anticipate. In fact, I read one article that seemed to say more doctors are dropping Medicare now, somehow indirectly as a result of the Affordable Care Act. I don't know if that's true.
What's going on with Medicare has nothing to do with what's going on with the Affordable Care Act. But this is a frustration that I know you're supposed to be able to click through and see the doctors in the network through the website. And I know that that's either not happening or it's very hard to find which doctors are in which networks. And also the other thing we know about the Affordable Care Act is that what many of the plans have done in order to keep the premiums down is they've gone to what are called narrow networks. So they have fewer doctors in the network than sort of many traditional plans. And it's hard. Many doctors, as the caller points out, simply don't know whether they're in the networks for these plans. They may be in the sort of the plan standard networks, but not in – they don't know which networks they're in. Oh. And that's a problem as people are trying to find out. You want to find out before you sign up for a plan, is your doctor in the network? And that turns out to be kind of difficult to find out.
One more call and one possible workaround for people having trouble with healthcare.gov or your state exchange, but you want to sign up. And I know this was on NPR today, and Walter in Marlboro wants to shout it out. Hi, Walter. You're on WNYC.
Hello. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, I just went back on that website, and it only covers the 34 healthcare.gov states and not the local ones.
You mean the site you called about, healthsherpa.com,
yes.
Health Sherpa?
Yes, Health Sherpa is right. Currently, it only handles the 34 the federal exchange. But I think that's the one that's having the issue. So it's called healthsherpa.com. It's also on Facebook under the same name, the Health Sherpa. And all it's asking for is your zip code and your annual salary and how many people in your family, and you get an instant feedback as to what specific plans are there and what the costs are and whatever your supplement is. It takes something like 30 seconds.
Walter, thank you very much. And this was on NPR this morning. Julie, have you seen healthsherpa.com, and is that a good workaround for many people to healthcare.gov?
I heard the story, but I haven't seen it yet.
So check it out, folks. Meanwhile, Google, Oracle, Red Hat reported on Morning Edition to offering to troubleshoot healthcare.gov. So there's a world of pro-Obamacare coders out there willing to help. So hopefully they will get healthcare.gov in as good shape by the end of the month as they're saying that they will. And we could talk about this on and on and on and on ad infinitum, ad nauseum, but we're going to have to leave it here for today. Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for NPR, thank you so much for giving us this time.
You're so welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And still to come today, as the Philippines comes to grips with the devastation from Typhoon Haiyan, a court ruling here in New York says the city is still not ready to protect some of our most vulnerable residents from another Sandy. Should the United States and Canada become one country, we will hear a proposal to that effect. Decoding the new statin guidelines. And up next, the incoming New York City Comptroller and outgoing Borough President of Manhattan, Scott Stringer. Stay with us.